I am the architect. I created the Matrix.
Shall we play a game?
Okay, let's get right to it. This is the second podcast on this Saturday, and I wouldn't have come back and said anything except that my favorite opinion writer, George Will, that's George F. Will, did a column for the Washington Post. And I have to say, if you haven't read anything that Will has written, then you've missed a great experience. He has several books out. He's a big follower of baseball and has one of the greatest baseball books I've ever read, only because it goes into significant detail on pitching and how the ball is thrown and how many times the ball turns between the pitcher's mound and the home plate, how fast people run, and statistics. It's full of extremely analytical but well-written data on baseball, and that's George Will. Now, he's also written many other books that are just as interesting on conservatism, conservative views. He is a conservative, and he's got an article in the Washington Post that you have to take a look at, and if you don't have time, I'm going to give you a summary of it. And the title starts with, "Sinister Figures Lurk Around Our Careless President." I mean, Will is a master of the English language. Frankly, when I read his writing, I sometimes forget what he's saying because there is such a great cadence of the language and the phraseology. I actually have to read it a couple of times to understand what he meant, or at least what I thought he meant. But he certainly is a master of vocabulary, and his title supports that when he uses words like sinister and lurk. I mean, we know that. I think tigers lurk or lions lurk, but lurking is something negative. So, sinister figures lurk around our careless president. Now, here's his opening sentence, which if I was Pence, I would take great offense with. With eyes wide open, Mike Pence eagerly auditioned for the role as Donald Trump's poodle. That's pretty harsh. Not Donald Trump's dog, but Donald Trump's poodle. I don't know why he put poodle in there instead of schnauzer or bloodhound or just dog, but no doubt he probably had several drafts of that sentence before he concluded that poodle was the right word. I don't know why poodle is better than dog. Poodles, I think, are beautiful animals, but in any event, he says Mike Pence eagerly auditioned for the role as Donald Trump's poodle. Now, another person, by the way, that auditioned was Corker, the person, the senator that's giving Trump so much trouble now, because Corker says, "I'm not running for re-election, so now I can tell the truth." What does that say about Senator Corker? Does it mean that 2 years ago, when he was saying positive things about Trump, those weren't the truths? But now that he's not running for re-election, he can say the truth, which to me is a major castigation of politics by saying that when I'm running for re-election, I can't tell the truth. But now that I'm not, I can tell the truth. This is a good reason why we should have limited numbers of terms for our politicians, because we won't know the truth until they're not running. But back to Will's article. He goes on to say, "Now comfortably leashed, he deserves the degradations that he seems too sycophantic to recognize, as such. He did Trump's adolescent bidding with last Sunday's pre-planned virtue pageant of scripted indignation." I mean, I have to say, it's just wonderful. Scripted indignation. In a few sentences, he just calls Pence every name in the book. And he goes on to make another sentence, which is equally imaginative and well-written. No unblinkered observer can still cling to the hope that Pence has the inclination, never mind the capacity, to restrain, never mind educate, the man who elevated him to his current glory. I'm going to copy this sentence down because the phrasing is so great. The inclination, never mind the capacity, to restrain, never mind educate. See, Will is unbelievable. I mean, he's persuasive. I don't even know he's persuading me to a certain point. He goes on to make a almost left-handed criticism of Corker when he says, a man who interviewed for the position Pence captured, Senator Bob Corker, Republican from Tennessee, is making amends for saying supportive things about Trump. In 2016, for example, Corker said he was repulsed by people trying to transform the Republican National Convention from a merely ratifying body into a deliberative body for the purpose of preventing what has come to pass. But now Corker says anything he said about Trump that was positive 2 years ago, not true. I'm not running for re-election. I can now tell the truth. I can now say that Trump is a child, that he's not educated, that he's not fit to govern. But wait a minute. 2 years ago, you never said that. But you can say it now because you're not running for re-election. I hope you see the problem I have with anything Corker would say now. It's like the person on the witness stand who's asked by the lawyer, well, you lied once before, you lied and you said this, now you're saying something different, which is the truth. And how do we know Corker isn't saying it out of revenge and spite more than what he believes? Because he's already told us he was a liar. He lied 2 years ago. Oh, but he says, I'm now telling you the truth now. Now, Will's unbelievable gift for writing, in my mind, is wonderful, but it also tells me that he's an elitist. He doesn't write for the rest of us. His sentences are complicated and almost obscure. He writes, Trump's energy, unleavened by intellect and untethered to principle. That's just wonderful. Unleavened by intellect and untethered to principle. This is just a great phrase. I'm going to try to use this sometime in something I write. Unleavened by intellect and untethered to principle. So when I'm debating somebody, I could say, oh, Jack, that's a great comment you made. It's unleavened by intellect and untethered to principle. In other words, I think Will gets so enamored with his own ability to write in this elitist fashion that he ceases trying to make a point. He goes on to say, Trump's energy serves only his sovereign instinct to pander to those who adore him as much as he does. It's just such a turn of the language. And then he goes on to say, unshakably smitten. They are impervious to the everest of evidence. I mean, it's just so well written that I almost forget he's criticizing Trump and the 55 million people that voted for him. The everest of evidence. See, that presumes that there is an Everest of evidence. I don't know about an Everest. Maybe there's a hill, an Everest. Everest is the highest mountain, I think, in the world or North America. It's 29,002 feet tall. I've forgotten now where it ranks in all the mountains. I don't even know where it is anymore. But the point is, that's what he talks about. And he refers to those who are in favor of Trump as a basket of gullibles. In other words, we are a basket of gullible people. We are the gullibles. And he goes on and on. He refers to certain things of Trump's agenda as smashing crockery, like throwing crockpots against a wall. And he talks about Trump's self-indulgent floundering precludes fulfillment of the promises he flippantly made. First place, he didn't make these promises flippantly. Throughout this whole campaign, as I recall, there were four or five things he promised every time. Now, has he been trying to fulfill those promises? Yes. What he didn't realize, and I think what I didn't realize, is that the president hasn't got that much power. He can want to lower taxes all he wants, but if Congress doesn't agree with him, they won't get reduced. Taxes won't get reduced. And once it hits Congress, it's all partisan. I mean, that's the issue that Will should be talking about. Why do all the Democrats vote with all the Democrats? Why does Nancy Pelosi tell the Democrats how to vote and then they all vote that way? Okay, Republicans are the same. What Will should be talking about is issues of partisanship. And he should be criticizing those issues because that's what keeps things from getting done. My guess, if you got the Democrats and Republicans in a room, they would all agree on pretty much the same types of things. They might disagree on execution. But when it gets down to the floor, when it gets down to the details, we have totally partisan voting. I'm a Democrat. I get my instructions on how to vote as a Democrat, and I vote as a Democrat. That's the issue that should be talked about by writers like George Will, who could express it in terms that I will never be capable of expressing. Because that's the issue that America faces. It is not Trump's policy or Trump's tweets. It is the partisanship where the Democrats vote according to the Democratic leadership and do not listen to the majority of Americans, where everybody has a poll that supports their belief. These are serious issues. Can all the polls be wrong for one side or the other? I'm a Democrat. My polls prove what I say. I'm a Republican. My polls prove what I say. The Everest of evidence is on partisanship. That's where the evidence lies. Who doesn't want to reduce taxes? But if it comes to a vote, the Democrats will vote against it if Pelosi and her group tells them to. Now he goes on, Will does, and talks about how horrible Stephen Bannon is. Talks about the alt-right. I don't even know what the alt-right is. I guess it's the outlying areas of the right. And I guess they're equivalent to the outlying beliefs on the left. And he quotes Raymond Lopez, a University of Chicago PhD candidate in political philosophy, demonstrates how Trump's election has brought back to the public stage ideas that a post-Lincoln America had slowly but determinedly expunged. Let's see. Lopez, a PhD candidate, means he's probably 25, 26 years old, and he's at the University of Chicago. I can only tell you this. I did not have much a view of the world when I was 26 or when I was 30. It took me till I was about 60 to have enough experience to understand how slowly these things happen. The same person goes on to say, with their version of the identity politics practiced by progressives, alt-right theorists hold that the tribalism to which people are prone should not be transcended but celebrated. Lopez explains the alt-right sees society as inevitably a zero-sum contest among fundamentally competing identity groups. What the devil does that even mean? That's why they called an ivory tower. Because they write things like that. No, I'm not stupid. I'm not a genius either. But I do appreciate clear, concise, transparent writing. So Will must have a friend at the University of Chicago, and that's what he's quoting. And I'm beginning to think, by the way, Will may not be a conservative. Maybe he's something else, or maybe he's changed. Remember, the story opened up with sinister figures lurk around the White House. And I guess he's talking about some person named Stephen Miller, who, and by the way, Will refers to Stephen Miller as White House residue. My gosh. White House residue. He could have referred to it as poodle residue and picked up what he said in his first sentence. White House residue. He calls him the enfant terrible. And Miller recently said, in sending our tax reform proposal to the tax writing committees, we will include instructions to ensure all low and middle income households are protected. So what is wrong with that? What is wrong with that? But Will says, that's White House residue. I don't even get it. And Will goes on to say, so Congress will be instructed by Trump's 32-year-old acolyte. But wait a minute. Didn't Will just quote a PhD candidate from the University of Chicago who can't be more than 26 or 27 years old? And Trump and Will devoted about a third of his article to quoting from this guy named Lopez. Go figure. Now he says Trump can't listen to somebody who's 32 years old. Doesn't make any sense. You see, once you realize that Will's writing is beautiful, it's like Walden, and that his use of the English language and phraseology and comparisons are beautiful, you realize that he really doesn't have many good points to make. He could have written this entire article in one sentence. He just could have said, hey, Pence is a dog, and Trump doesn't know what he's doing. That could have been the whole thing. But he spent, I don't know, 400 or 500 words writing beautiful phrases to say the same thing. See, I'm from the Midwest. If we think you're crazy, we just say, we think you're crazy. We don't couch it in alliterative phrases with hyperbole. We just say, you're crazy. But not Will. This is kind of the reason I like Will, because he's such fun. He's such a fun person to read, and you can learn from his great phrasing. But when you come down to it, his point isn't any better than simply saying, I, George Will, think Trump's crazy. I, George Will, think Trump doesn't know what he's doing. And all I can tell you is this. The more I read about history, the more I read about presidents, they all had a whole group of people who didn't like what they did, who thought they were crazy, including Lincoln and probably Washington. My gosh, they crucified Jesus Christ. So there's a lot of people who didn't like him. So where's Will and all that? Just a really good writer with a very simple point. But he's dangerous. Because a lot of people will only read the headline. And what does his headline say? Sinister. Now, sinister is definitely bad. Sinister figures lurk That's even worse. And by the way, the picture that's underneath this title is just wonderful. It shows a person, which I believe is Miller, behind some bushes. He is lurking. So I'm sure the Washington Post and Will got a big kick out of picking that particular picture, which is not lost on me, because I can definitely see there's a figure. He doesn't look very sinister to me, but clearly he is lurking around some bushes. And that's all for today on George Will. Yes, I still like to read George Will, but no, I don't agree with many of the things he says anymore. But I love the way he says them. They're beautiful. It's like roses. I love roses, but I'm really careful when I'm grabbing them because they're protected by thorns. That's all for today, October 14th. Bob Sherwood with webtalkwithbob at gmail.com signing off. Yes, it's going to be a great week. I had 680 listens. That's the highest I have had in going up. And I hope I'm not just being provocative to get more listens. But maybe there's people out there that think I have something to say and are listening to it. Or maybe there's people out there that just don't agree with me and want to listen to it so they can say to themselves, I don't agree with Bob Sherwood. So you don't agree with me? Let me know. That's Bob Sherwood. Oh, excuse me. That's webtalkwithbob@gmail.com. Send me an email. I'll respond. I'll only use your name if you ask me to. Have a great day and listen again tomorrow, because I'm going to comment on all the things you wanted me to comment on, which is Trump's decertification of Iran and ceasing payments to the insurance companies. All good fodder for the TV talk shows today. So tomorrow, you'll be well equipped to listen to another point of view from the heartland. Have a great day.